Okay, we are up to page Kuf Chaf Aleph. We learned last week about Seda, about capturing bees in the sukkah, and about pets. Page Kuf Chaf Aleph. We're up to Yud Nun Gimel. Really Kuf Chaf Beis. I just want to do one quick Shi'anim. He touches upon bugs. Okay, we're not going to do bugs now, but just he touches upon the issues about the certain types of bugs you're allowed to eat, certain types of bugs you can't eat. Also, laharog, you're not allowed to kill a creature on. You're not allowed to kill it a flea. That's a telad of sheichet. So just because you're allowed to trap, even though we learned that there are times when you are allowed to trap insects. Page Kuf Chaf Aleph Chaf Gimel on the Shi'anim Yisrael Mahalacha. So we learned last week that there are times when you are allowed to trap bees and insects if they are a danger, if they are annoying you. The reason why you're allowed to capture is primarily they are Einai B'minai Nitzait. These are creatures which are not trapped. As something which is not trapped, there is no Malacha Deraisa of Tseda. So, but even though you're still not allowed to trap them, it's also midrabanan. The answer is, if it's annoying you, or if there's some semi-sakana, that already is enough for us to overlook the iser derabanan, and you are allowed to trap them. However, you're not allowed to kill them. Just because you're allowed to trap a bee in your sukkah on sukkahs, or you're allowed to capture, I don't know if you capture a fly, I don't know how you do that.
You don't kill it, it's going to keep annoying you.
So a fly is saying a fly is going to annoy you. If you don't kill the fly is going to annoy you. So you're right. In such a situation, you might be allowed to kill a fly if it's really driving you crazy. I don't know. It's not so simple.
I was once sitting with a fly. It kept coming back to the same spot every time.
So what do you do?
So one day I washed him and I went, boom.
On Shabbos. On Shabbos?
No,
talking about Shabbos. You're not allowed to kill. I don't know how you kill a fly. I always tried. I don't know. Someone told me when they were driving. They went. They were learning how to drive. Driver's education. So they get nervous. The pigeons. Every time they're driving, there's always a pigeon on the road. So they kept on slapping. So the instructor says, "What are you doing? Just drive. Forget about the pigeons." So he says, "I'm afraid I'm going to kill the pigeons." So he says, "If you kill the pigeon, if you succeed in running, I'll give you $100. There's no way. They can always outsmart you. No matter how fast you go, they're going to get out of the way no matter how fast. So you have nothing to worry about. Okay, but let's put this over here. Also laharag ayin dikri hadinim the also lahamit sam hamavis lzuvim laakvadim b'shabbos yaf shegrama ba'alma hu mikomoka mosul tautla sam hamavis misham muksa. The lav barachiluhu. The first he talks about over here two different issues. Number one, he talks about, he mentions grama and he mentions muksa. Are you allowed to set a trap on Shabbos? One would argue, of course, what am I doing? The only time you're allowed to do malach is when you're doing a direct action. When you're doing tzedu, when you're doing something that's indirect, I'm going to set a trap now, and if I'm lucky, maybe within 5 hours, the squirrel or the mouse will go for the bait and it'll be killed. I'll trap it. So I'm not doing anything directly now. So according, if we follow the pattern, the template of all the malachos of Shabbos, a grama is generally mutter. Especially when you have a need, there's some pressing need, a grum is mutter. The tzeda is the exception to the rule. Grumma is usur even when it comes to tzeda, because that is how you trap. The nature of tzeda is to do something that has a delayed reaction. You close the door, you set a trap, and the animal eventually falls inside. So you're not allowed to set a trap on Shabbos, even though you're not directly capturing the animal now. Just the setting of the trap is the malacha deraisa. Then he points out another problem. What about poison? poison. So poison, you'll say poison also to a certain degree is seder, because the, well, it's not real seder, because the real seder is when the animal is alive. It's davar shabimino nitzayt. When you poison something, it's not a real, it's not a seder deraisa, but it's like a seder midrabbanim, because the animal is trapped but it's dead. But the way you trap it is by killing it. But you also are getting involved in the issue of muktza, because the poison that you're putting out for the bird, for the animal, is has no other purpose than muktza machmas. That's what he says here. One more time, the also lahamit salamavus lizvuvim for flies lakvarim b'shabbos v'afshe grama b'almu, even though it's a grama. So you'll tell me that it's not a real tzedek, because real tzedek is when you capture it alive, and here I'm capturing it dead, so it's not a tzedek de'iraisa. And when we add to that that I'm not doing any ma'isa b'yodayim, it's a delayed reaction. So maybe it should be mutter, even though it's a grama. There are other issues. Mikomok mos l'tatal hasalamavus mishum demuksa. It's muksa d'lav barachilu. It is not edible. Yelo also hev yisham asham. His stop kasa being pasach the suffix. Yeah, he presents the following dilemma. His stop kasa being pasach hamesuda sheyesh ba'akvul lefnei hachasol sheachilena im yesh b'ze iser termishum netilas neshama. If you have a mouse that was trapped before Shabbos and on Shabbos, and now the cat is in the house. So by you opening up the mouse trap, you're basically feeding a mouse to the cat. So what's so terrible? You're causing the cat to take the life of the mouse. Just like you are not allowed to directly take the life of a mouse because it's netilas neshama, it is shoychet. By feeding a mouse to a cat, you are indirectly taking the life of the mouse. That's netilas neshama. So this is a dilemma. It's a histap kosa. Because on the one hand, I'm not doing it biyodayim. I'm just opening up the trap. I'm letting the mouse loose. And it's indirect that the cat's going to sense there's a mouse on the loose and it's going to be eaten. On the other hand, since it's happening immediately, maybe that's called the ma'isa biyodayim. That is his dilemma. Yesh b'zeh iser Torah mishum nefilas neshama v'yal kol panim osim b'drabanan ayin sham. He concludes the ikri hadim, he concludes the shenap yiden v'vagam b'minchas Shabbos. You should not do so. Since it happens imminently, it's like you're doing it biyodayim. V'ayin b'shut evin yikorah. Now he goes off on a tangent of eating. How are you allowed to eat worms?
Are you allowed to open a trap and let animal out?
Yes, 100%.
If the animal, it should be like,
no, there's no din matir versus kosher. Exactly, there's another exception. There's kosher matir. Whatever you can't tie, you're not allowed to untie. Say that there's no such thing. There's no prohibition of letting an animal loose. If an animal is trapped, l'chatchil, you're allowed to open up the door and let the animal loose. And in fact, or if you have the bees in the sukkah, you're supposed to let the bees out when you finish your meal. If you're in the sukkah and there's the bee that's annoying you, so you're allowed to trap the bee. Because we learned last week, what happens when the meal is over? You should let the bee free. Number one, tzar bali chayim. That's number two. Number two is you're going to kill it. Because if you don't let the bee free, it's going to suffocate. And when Shabbos is over, Yom Tov is over, it'll be dead. That means you have indirectly killed the bee. And that is a toilada of a shoychet, netilas neshama. Now it's not a deraisa, because I didn't do it now, I did it, it was done through a delayed reaction, but it still is not in the spirit of halacha that you should be responsible for the death of a creature on Shabbos or Yom Tov. So l'chatchila you're supposed to release the bee after the meal is over.
I remember a few years ago, they used to have in Bird Park, all over the place, you have these bottles.
You're not allowed to set them on Shabbos. You should set them up before Shabbos begins, before Yom Tov begins.
It's not dead.
It's not dead.
It just flies around,
but it's still called Seder. Anytime that you take a creature from an area that is free, and you confine it to a place where you can now get it in one shot, in one lunge, in one shot, that is a melacha of Seder. So we look. That's setting a trap.
It's normal to drink.
Okay, so that's not your kavana. But let's say you're doing it specifically in order to set the trap to capture them. So that is a form of tzeda. That is a form of tzeda. We're going to halachah l'maaseh. We hold that when it comes to bees, b'di'eved, you are allowed to trap them because bees are creatures which are not trapped in industry. No one out there in the world, in the professional world, is in the business of trapping bees. Even people who have bees to harvest honey, they're not trapping the bees. They're just creating an environment which is pleasant, which is inviting for the bees to exist, conducive for the bees to exist. But there is no, the bees, halach we paskin, are in the category of minoy davar she'enoy b'minoy nitzayt. They are creatures which are not captured. Therefore, if you decide to capture it, you're doing something which is unusual, and you mimela have not violated the malacha deraisa of tzeda. Have you done a malacha of tzeda midrabanan? Yes, you have. But the difference is, if you have a need to do so, you're permitted to do so. What would be the need if it's unpleasant? It's good, the sakana. They may sting you, or it's disturbing to your onik Shabbos. So on a yomtiv, you're permitted to do so. But there's another problem. The problem is by doing so, you also killing the bee. By killing the bee, that is a malacha netilas neshama. The answer is, by setting a trap, you're not killing the bee. The bee could fly around all at once in the trap. But if you're going to leave the bee in this trap for a couple of hours, it's going to die, so that is not mamish killing the bee, but it borders on killing the bee, because your actions are responsible for its slow, prolonged death. Therefore, the solution is just let the bee go, and then you have not done anything wrong. Yeah. I don't understand. In the sukkah, right? In the sukkah. All right.
Well, what about a lion? Lion's not the derech to travel. You see a lion come down, you put it.
How do you know it's not derech to travel lion? Why do you know it's not derech to travel lion? Maybe it is.
You see a lion come down the street, you drive.
So maybe you're right.
Lock the gate of the driveway.
Bikuach nefesh. Bikuach nefesh. Beers in the country. What do they do when they see a bear in the country? They call the police.
I saw a kingdom having your eyes.
Did you have your head examined?
What do they do in the country when there's a beer? You call the police.
Yeah.
On Shabbos, they paskin halacha l'maaseh, imam shel chuyuv to gear. There are real problems in the Catskills. There are beers. Yes. There was a maaseh 2 years ago. It killed a child. Yes. Terrible child.
Yes.
So you see a beer, they tell you. I read it, they had a whole write-up. You see a beer on Shabbos, you call the police. You call the police. Sakon is the fascist. Okay, let's go further. Now, here he talks to another wrenching shayla. Let's say, now this shayla is very interesting. This shayla is eating are you allowed to take a drink of water on Shabbos? Because you'll be killing the copepods. That's what it says. So let's say you want to pass skin like the person like Belsky, who holds you're allowed to drink the copepods, because he holds that this is. Well, not because you don't see them. Even if you do see them, that this is b'riyasa. He holds that it's, there are no kalim. The pipes, the entire system of the water system is all mechuber libriyasa. So you're allowed to eat these creatures. This is where they were born. You're only not allowed to eat a bug when it separates from its natural source of where it came from. So the question is, when it comes to your kitchen sink, is that already cool that it left its natural environment when it goes through the pipes?
Talks about cheese, the same thing.
Right, that's what we're talking about right now. So come to over here. So there's another issue. Fine, very good. So during the week, gesundheit, you can drink all the copepods all you want. But on Shabbos, if the copepods are alive, you're killing it. So, are you allowed to netilas neshama? It's netilas neshama on Shabbos. How are you allowed to drink the water on Shabbos? Even if you don't have a filter. If you have a filter, you can't drink the water because you're and if you don't have a filter, you can't drink the water because you're netilas neshama. So this is not a new shayla. This is not shayla. It refers to bugs that are found in cheese. Now you can have the same shayla, the bugs, the big shayla, which everyone, a big machlokes, the bugs that are found. We once discussed this very, very briefly. It's extremely complicated, which there is no resolution. The bugs that are found in fish, right? There's certain types of fish. What are they called? I forgot what they're called. These new types, everyone is a big machlokes, is this called, these natural, non-natural, whatever they are, but here there's a shayla, if they are still alive at the time when you consume them, is it called netilas neshama? So he says over here that it's not. Anything that's part of derech b'riyaso, just like you're allowed to eat it, It's not called the Sheretz Hamayim or Sheretz whatever it is. You also, there is no prohibition of Netilas Neshama. To be Chayif and Netilas Neshama, it must be Poirish from its natural habitat. The Ayin B'Shut Evan Agikara Shem Yashav Minig Ha'ilam Sha'ichlim Gidvina Mitoilas B'Shabbos. Cheese, wormy cheese that comes from worms. The Yamtif Ha'toilam Chayim. And these worms in your cheese are alive. Allah'achlan B'Shut the mutlachlam b'chol calls man shloi perishu. What? This is the way it was. I don't know. It probably existed also. I'm not familiar with this type of cheese. There are certain types of. There's some technique of making cheese, and the process of making cheese, it develops worms, and the worms can be consumed during the weekday because it's bria. So the worms have not separated from their natural habitat from where they've come, and just like you, there's no shayla of eating a sheretz samayim or sheretz aretz, whatever it is. There is no prohibition on Shabbos of netilas neshama. So the mutter le'achlan b'chol g'holz man. That is where they grew from. Therefore, it's like lice. He compares it to spontaneous generation. In other words, just saying what the idea he's giving is, in order for there to be a dinim tilas neshama, it must be like it was in the midbar. In the midbar, tilas neshama was on animals. Animals are things which we see with the naked eye have come from a mother. An animal has not developed spontaneously. No one ever saw an animal come out of the ground. A baby comes from the mother's womb. And so, in order for something to be chayif and tilas neshama is manazeh, to the naked eye, it must. It would be noticeable that it came out of a mother. It came out of a creature. Something which to the naked eye develops spontaneously, like lice, not the lice that we are familiar with, because the place can say that we see the nits, we can see the eggs, we can see where they've come from, but there's certain, sometimes microscopic lice where the human eye cannot see that it's come from a mother. To the naked eye, it appears like it developed out of thin air. That there is no iser deraisa of netilas neshama, and if it annoys you, l'chatila, you can kill it. The same principle applies to netilas neshama with regard to things that come out, creatures that have not yet come out of their natural habitat. Netilas neshama in the Mishkan was an animal which came out of the mother's womb, and it developed, and now they slaughtered it. But if the baby, but something which is in cheese or copepods that are in water have never separated from their natural habitat are not similar to the type of netilas neshama that existed during the time of the Midbar, time of the Mishkan, and therefore there is no prohibition. You're allowed to eat them, even though in the process you're taking their life. Okay, let's go to the next halacha. Halacha nun gimel. Yesh lizar kishereitzim listam. We did this already. I'm sorry. Let's go to the next halacha. On lacha nun dalit. Now we start shoychid. Also lohitzi dam beafilu dam shebein hashinayim osar limtzitz. A person is not allowed to suck the blood out of his teeth, even though you're not, it's not left your mouth. Now, one thing you're sure, if you have a cut, you have a wound on your hand, you're not allowed to put your mouth and suck out. That is a toilada of netilas neshama. Blood, extracting blood, is a toilada of netilas neshama, death. Even though a person's not dying when you're taking out blood out of a womb, but it's an extension of that halacha. So what about it? What? Yes, if you're dealing with all the rules of refuah for Shabbos, so if you're dealing with Shabbos, it all depends on the type of wound. It's not going to get infected, not get infected, a child. Okay, that's a separate Shabbos. Let's say there is no worry for infection, or you have already a Band-Aid, and you want to take the Band-Aid off, have nothing better to do on Shabbos, and you want to take off the Band-Aid and suck out the blood. A vampire. or better, you want to suck out someone else's blood. So that is awesome. That is netilas neshama. One will ask, what about sucking out blood that has not left your body? It's inside your mouth. You have some type of wound on your gum, and you want to, I don't know, somehow apply suction. You're able to do so with your tongue and draw that blood. No, that's also forbidden, even though it's not technically awesome. It's not awesome in the Torah. Also, lohitzi dam afilum dam shebein hashinayim. Also, limtzitz v'chein also lohaniach alamaka ritia hamotzia dam v'leicha. You're now to apply some type of compress upon the wound, which will cause the blood and the pus to be extracted, because that's telada of netilas neshama. Umikol shekein de also litchek es hamaka lohitzi dam v'leicha. You're now to press it. Pressing is even worse than sucking. I guess pressing is more like shchita. When you do maisa shchita, you're cutting. You're doing a maisa dechika, and that caused the blood. When you maitzeitz, that's not the way the blood came out by shchita, but that's also us in midrabban. Halacha nun hey talks about now. He goes off on goizes nu malacha, a malacha of shearing. Part of shearing is cutting your nails. In order to be chayiv, first let me explain the halacha. In order to be chayiv for cutting nails, minatara, you have to use a utensil. In the Mishkan, the way they would shear, they would cut off wool from an animal, was with a utensil. With the utensil. So if a person cuts off his nails with a nail clipper, that it would be an iser d'oraisa. If a person cuts off his nails with his teeth, that's not awesome in a Torah, because that's not called not using a utensil. What about cutting it off with your own hands? You take one nail and you press against another nail. That's even better, because it's not similar to using a utensil. It's even less similar to using a utensil than when you use your teeth. When you use your teeth, you're at least involving another part of your body. When you're doing it with your own hands, you're using the same part of your body, but it's still osir. The only time it's mutter is if it's already partially separated and it's causing you pain. Then we put all these things in together, all the factors converge, that in this instance, since you're not doing olacha deraisa and you are in pain and already is partially detached, you're not doing a complete action, you're just doing a partial action, then it would be mutter. Let's see it inside. Tzitzin. Tzitzin means an extension of the nail, a fraction of the nail. Shehein kamin ritzuos stakos, which are like small little slivers of cartilage, sheperishu me'orha etzba, which already have separated. They are partially separated. What are they called? Cuticles? Around the fingernail, around the nail. Also lehasiron, it's also to remove them. Bein bechli, that would be the raisa. Bein biyad, with your hand. Bein bishinayim. The tziporin shenirsheh nifrash rubo. However, if the nail already, the majority already has been separated, the karvla he not take, and it's already 90% on it now, but it's majority, it's close to coming off entirely. Umitzaro, here's the key condition, it's causing you pain. Motor lehasiro biyad, you're allowed to remove it with your hand. Avoloi bichli, but not with the utensil. The im lo perashuboy, if the majority is still connected, also lehasiroy afilu biyad, because again it's doime to the melacha deraisa of goizes. Goizes deraisa must be bikli, and it must be where it's completely attached. Here where it's not bikli, and it's not completely attached, it's mostly off, and it's causing you tsar, is the only time.
So if he's only cut off a little bit, but it's got pain.
If you have pain, then you have a heter. That's what it says. No, a little bit it says is not enough.
If you have to be so,
I guess you have to have a lot of pain. If you have a lot of pain, then I guess the rules that over here, we're dealing over here where it's causing you a small amount of pain.
Exactly.
Causing a small amount of pain, the mitzaro seems to be a small amount of pain only then when the majority has been separated and it's only to be cut off then you. But if you have a small 20% is cut off and it's causing you a small amount of discomfort and you want to now take your teeth or take your other nail and pull it off, it seems that would not be sufficient. Unless it's causing you an enormous amount of pain, I would imagine then it fits in a different category of halacha, which then you can do with a shinui, someone else can do it, or you can do it yourself. But here we're dealing with something which is tolerable, it's just uncomfortable. Today the attitude is even the smallest amount of discomfort is intolerable for us. We're very delicate creatures. Like when I grew up, it used to be you have a headache. It's not so long ago. You got a headache, so too bad. It's Shabbos. You're not allowed to take an aspirin. Too bad. You got headaches? You got a headache. So I also have a headache. Everyone has a headache. Too bad for you. Today I have a headache. Oh, even a small little headache. What? Nafal
Mishka.
Nafal. You're ready with extremely delicate creatures. You can't deal with any discomfort. That's how it is. We're a different society. So, when is this?
Low threshold.
Don't
you
say a special
post
or something if you take a
time
to Shabbos
and Shiva? Yeah, you can be a scholar all you want, but halacha l'maisa, when you're in pain, we are super sensitive today. Maybe that's the maila. Okay, aser lishpaich l'soich. Now we're going to a new halacha. He's jumping around from one halacha, one malacha to another malacha. Ibut, you're not allowed to tan hides. Ancient times, if you slaughter an animal and you have in front of you the hide of an animal, what do you do with the hide of the animal? The clock is ticking. You must immediately, without delay, soak it in lime. And if you don't soak it in lime, the hide will end up in the garbage. A hide that's worth a lot of money, a good piece of leather, you can make a nice pocketbook. Like right now, Louis Vuitton pocketbook. Shoes, a nice piece of nice handbag. Go online and see how much a handbag cost. An exotic handbag cost $5,000, $10,000. What is it? It's a piece of leather, a piece of hide of the skin. So, but if you have to start the process of preserving the leather immediately by soaking it in lime or some strong salts, so this is a malacha de'oraisa, because in the Mishkan they needed hides for the Mishkan to cover the Mishkan, and the moment the animal was slaughtered, they immediately immersed the hides in some type of magic potion. Anything which you do today by taking any type of food or any type of item that is preserved in some type of potent ingredient is a tolada of ibud. And the example he gives here is pouring vinegar into liquid, because by pouring vinegar also lishpech l'secha chaymetz shar mashkim sheyishavu gam kein chaymetz. If I have some juice and I want this juice to become a chemical reaction, whatever it is, acidic. So what do? You take that and you pour it into vinegar, and now you have a paint thinner, right? You have now a nice collection of acidic acid, whatever you need. So that is called ibut. I've taken something that would perish. How long does orange juice last? It doesn't last forever. Right, there's an expiration date. Eventually, orange juice is going to turn sour. It's going to become unhealthy. It's going to be spoiled. But if I take the orange juice and I pour it into vinegar, I'll now have the orange juice will last for 10 years. Because I've created some...
Don't touch it.
But yes, it's not drinkable. But
it's fine. It's not drinkable, fine. But it has a function. It has a function that it otherwise would not have had. I have preserved it. I've started a chemical process that has preserved this liquid for a prolonged period of time. That is exactly the concept of ibud oros. If I do not take the hide and soak it in lime, the hides in a day will go in the garbage. There is no hope. But if I preserve it in salt or in lime, I'll have it forever. Same exact thing has been accomplished with this liquid by mixing it with vinegar. Therefore, it may not be done on Shabbos. It is a telada of ibud. That's what it does. Lemon juice preserves
the cheese.
Okay, so that in Chanami, that's exactly what it's saying. Right, very good. Also, lishbech l'seich ha'chaymet shamashkim sheyisavu gam kein ha'chaymetz. Now, here he goes off on something very interesting. So, according to this rule, unfortunately, he's not here, Rabbi Mayavsky, today to tell us all the different dark secrets of what goes on in the slaughterhouse behind the scenes. I'm sure this happens when you have meat has to be soaked within 72 hours. If you don't soak meat within 72 hours, you can no longer salt it. It can no longer be kashered. And it's a very big problem.
You water it down.
Yeah, they water it down. They hose it down. A lot of the meats are slaughtered down south, and they're shipped up here to New York, New Jersey for processing. And sometimes there's a delay in the shipping, and it's not going to arrive within 72 hours from the time it was slaughtered.
And it's a problem with meat coming from the Midwest.
It's still a problem. It's still a problem.
It's processed at the where it's slaughtered.
It's still a problem. Now it's frozen. The meat is frozen. So some people want to be makel that when it's frozen, it's not a problem. That many poskim don't hold of that. Okay, that's a very big leniency which they don't want to rely on. It's not good for business. Once you tell your kosher customer that it was not soaked, even though it was frozen, they're not going to want to hear that. So what do? So they stop. They have pit stops along the way where the truck driver gets out and hoses down the meat, opens up the truck, and they have these massive power hoses and these pit stops along the way, and they hose down the meat. And then the question is, well, how do you know it was hosed down? Who saw him do it? There was no mashkiach. Who's driving the truck?
Jimmy Murphy.
Exactly. So can we rely upon Jimmy Murphy to hose down?
Get a letter from
the can we rely upon him? These are very tough questions. Who's really watching? The video surveillance, and if you want to have a mashkiach, you know how much that's going to cost? Now, who's going to pay for that? The customer's going to pay for that. And then there's going to be competition. Then they're not going to buy our product. They'll buy someone else's meat because it's cheaper, because we don't have to pay the mashkiach. Everything is money. It all comes down to money. So it's a very big problem. So here he talks about a situation where it's Shabbos. Okay, forget about the kashrus. Now it's Shabbos. And it's Shabbos. When Shabbos arrives, it's going to be 72 hours. And if we don't soak this meat in water, we're not going to be able to kasher the salt the meat later on. Are you allowed to soak the meat on Shabbos and do it to extend the clock so you can kasher later on? Basar shlo nimlach v'chal yom shlishi shlo b'Shabbos. So what do? Shim lo yadi chehu yehei nesef. If I don't soak it in water in order to extend its the zman of salt. Yeah, the reason why you do this is because salt, you need to salt it to extract the blood. But salt will only extract the blood for the first 72 hours. Once meat sits for 72 hours, the blood gets frozen in its place, congeals in the meat. Even when you salt it, it will not extract the blood. The salt will not succeed in extracting the blood. But when you cook it, then the blood will come out and will go back in and will make the meat treif. So how do you solve this problem? If you soak meat within 72 hours, that extends the window of time when the salting will be effective. Now I can wait another 72 hours and I can salt it, and the salting will work, even though in total it's going to be...
Boiling?
What? Boiling is also a shy. I don't remember the answer. Boiling is also a shy, I think. Once 72 hours have passed... Boiling, you have 72 hours, boiling is not a problem? I'm not so sure. Yeah, same way salt doesn't pull out the dam. The boiling, I don't remember. I don't remember the answer. Well, liver b'chlal you don't need, but liver b'chlal, liver is different. Liver is all blood, so liver, the salting doesn't work l'chatchila. You can salt liver all you want, it's still treif. You have to only boil it.
Only the first 3 days?
Yeah, it has to be broiled within the first 3 days, of course. Yes, it must be broiled the first 3 days. What? It could be soaking works. So if you soak it, so it extends the zman. Let's say you don't soak it. Let's say you don't soak it. It's frozen, and then you want to boil it after 70 days. What? That's a machlekes. If it's frozen, if it's frozen, does that stop the clock? That's a big machlekes upon his game, and they don't want. B'di'evit, it works. B'di'evit, if the meat is frozen, then the clock does not. The clock stops. The clock stops, and you can still salt it after 72 hours. That's a b'di'evit. The chatchila, they try not to rely upon that, because even if 72 hours passes, that's it. You lose out. So here the problem is, must go not your day shayla, Shabbos shayla. I want to soak the meat on Shabbos so that I should be able to still kasher to salt it when Shabbos is over. Is this a geder of ibud? What's the concept of ibud? You soak something in a liquid in order to preserve it for a longer period of time. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm soaking the meat in liquid in order so I can preserve it for a longer period. I can kasher later on. That's machz bosh shleim lach v'chal yom shlish shalom b'shabbos sheim lo yadichei u yenesar yesh lehadichoi al yidei ein yehudi it's osser aval al yidei yisrael al yidei yisrael osser. So that's what it says. Only a non-Jew can do it. Very interesting.
Why can't non-Jew do it? Shlish shalom k'moshah.
Why can a non-Jew, so he's saying that it's a amira la'akum. He's saying that it's amira la'akum. So I guess what you have to say is, good question, is when there's a hefsid gadol, amira la'akum is mutter. Okay, that's number one. When it's l'tzarech, now is this l'tzarech mitzvah l'chor or not? Number two, it's not really nisar d'araisa. It's not ibud derais. Ibud derais is only when you're dealing with real leather. Taking a food, there's a question, is there a din of ibud by food? L'chorim in Atarud, there's no ibud food, it's only a derabanan. So it's shvus l'shvus. Amir liyakum is derabanan, ibud is midderabanan. So it's like a double derabanan. A double derabanan, we make it, you can have the non-Jew do it.
You have to watch.
I guess you do. You can't trust the guy. You can't trust the guy. That's a kashrus issue. But they have all the time. They have all these in the kashrus magazines, all the stories about the mashgichim. They're there for Rosh Hashanah. In between the kias, he's watching the thermostat on the machine to make sure it doesn't go higher or lower than a certain temperature. And he's blowing the shofar as he's watching. You go read the kashrus magazine, all these stories of the mashgichim. I remember there's such a story where there was a mashgich, he had to be in the other side of the world in a factory. Because when they make the product, it was going to happen on Yom Kippur, and the critical moment is when the machine reaches a certain temperature. It has to either reach a certain temperature, or it has to not reach a certain temperature, and he has to have his eyes glued to the gauge to see. And otherwise, we're dealing over here with an ingredient which goes into every product in the world. Every Hasidisha, Hamisha, Hechsher makes use of this ingredient that is certified by the OU. And the ingredient is made once a year, and Mazel has it has to be made in this factory in the other end of the world on Yom Kippur. And who's going to be in charge? This Mashkiach. He has to leave his family. He left his... I read this article somewhere. One of his magazines. He left his family. He went Yom Kippur. And he's sitting there. The whole Yom Kippur sitting there. And the Rabbanim told him, you have to do it. Klal Yisrael needs you. Because this ingredient is going to go into every product in the world. And you need a Mashkiach. And he's sitting there the whole Yom Kippur in front of this machine in his factory. Davening B'Yechidus. He has to wear this costume, right? To make sure no contamination. No, that was his kittel. That was his kittel. I was saying part of the story. That was his kittel. He has to wear this white costume because he has to watch. You need a mashgich. You can't. That's the laws of kashrus. Okay, let's go down the halacha. Now let's see over here on the bottom. The bottom says, on the bottom of the halacha, Ladichay al yidei ein Yehudi, al yidei akum. Ayin b'zeh b'shari tshuva. Shevi divrei shut shvus Yaakov. Shekostav. The afl divrei ha-magin avram. Shom. The machmir b'kol makom. Moda. Even though the magin avram is machmir. Not everyone agrees that you're allowed to do this. And we hold you can't do it. That's why you need to do it through a guy. B'kol makom. Moda. The b'kotsav. Ha-moicher l'acherim. Sheyesh hefsid godol yesh lahatir ayde Yaakov. We just said. You have a butcher. And he's not going to do this. And the store is going to be hefsid godol. He's allowed to go do this through a non-Jew. B'kain kosm of the Yehuda. Bozos, hapitumos, fattened geese, dika pseda, these are expensive, exotic type of poultry. Shari tzmud ladich ayde'akum v'shas atchak, afil ayde'yisrael. Even a Jew can do this. Even a Jew can go into the factory on Shabbos and hose down the meat in order that it should not be a loss. Because like I said, there's no real ibud. In this instance, it's only food. V'chein kasa primogodim, v'chein kasa pesche tshuva, v'ikrei dinim, v'ayin sham de'im b'laf haki tzach l'chay tziyada v'ah. So he has a kunz. You have this kunz in many different instances. Just see how, I don't have to wash my hands. Right, I went to the bathroom. I went to the Beis Lakish, say, so I can wash my hands on top of the meat that you're going to be eating next week. So when I wash my hands, I come to the Beis Lakish, say, so manela, it will rinse, the water will drip on the meat, and now we can salt it. Do you really know what goes on in those factories? You think this is a joke? This is no joke. Go find out. You'll be shocked.
You see 9 out of 10 guys not wash their hands
when they come out of the base, like he said. Yeah. Okay, so this is what it says. Look, I didn't buy. So it says you should wash your hands. The ayin sham the imlaf hachit zach lucha tziyada v'yidichem alabasa rak shlo yase kein bintilas yidaim shachris. Okay, he does say don't do this when it comes to Beis Akisei or even when you wake up in the morning because ruach ra shor aleim. So it's not nice. It's not nice that your ruach ra shall fall upon him. One thing that just strikes me as very interesting is how much water do you need? See today. Today, when they hose it down, I mean, how much water go? How much, you know, how much water they use to hose down the hose down when it's 72 hours? They have power hoses and these stopover sites, and they really do a good job. Here it says, you have a piece of meat, so you wash your hands, and the leftover water is going to fall on the meat. How much water already are we dealing with?
Yeah, it's the question. How much meat are you dealing with?
How much? Okay, how much meat? How much water? But you don't get a good feeling. Whatever it is, it doesn't seem like, you know, it's even when it comes to salt. I went to Empire, so you know, you think how much you salt. How when you salt poultry? How much? You know, they really salt it. You wouldn't believe. You wouldn't believe how much salt. Go. They, I mean, they do a full job. Yeah, you can feel on the chicken. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's not kosher chicken. I once there's a guy.
Too good.
He says there's definitely a difference in the taste.
Not kosher. Right. It's meat. Yeah, surely. The salting kills it.
Wash it off before you.
That's what they say. They say that you kill it when you salt meat. We kill the meat. But the truth is, we really are overdoing it. See, the Torah didn't want us. The Torah doesn't want us to not take away the flavor. We are not bikiyim in how much salt we really need. We have no choice but to go overboard. But technically speaking, the amount of salt you really need to do the job is probably very little, which would mean that our meat would really taste very similar, if not identical, to the meat of the goyim.
But the truth of the matter is, we salt meat half a cow chunk. It's not that great.
Is no that what do you mean? What?
Because years ago they didn't salt the meat with, you know, the
big pieces. They cut it up.
And then they salted it. So then it was really salty.
Uh-huh. Now it's less salt.
You know,
okay, I see.
Of the meat is not
okay, but bad. One thing that should they say is about liver. The goat, they don't understand us. They say I went to share. And like the goyim, they have no clue why Jews would broil liver. The whole hana of liver is the blood. That is the taste of liver, and that's exactly why we're not allowed to have liver, because liver is all blood. So a guy who has no understanding of religion and sees a Jew broil liver, they think they're out of their mind. What?
It's most
the blood. The blood. The Torah says multiple times, Le'sochlu al hadam. Multiple times. Yeah. That's how they can tell. That's how it was able. Taste it. It's too good. It's too. Yeah. It's a true story. That's exactly how it's a true story. That's how he was able to detect it. It doesn't. It tasted too good. The blood was not.
Wasn't salty.
Right. He did. Yeah. It wasn't salty enough. All right. We will stop over here.
No,
the Erev Chatzeres, the custom is to renew it every Pesach. That's the custom. Erev Pesach. That's the custom. What? Matzahs. Yeah, you should use matzahs now also. You should use now the Chatzil, the kosher Pesach matzahs now, because just in case you forget, you should use now, if you have. Do you have now kosher Pesach matzahs? So it doesn't matter. You have in the closet kosher Pesach matzahs, so use them. Yeah, use them. They're not stale. When push comes to shove, you would eat it, right?
Push comes to shove.
So that's still okay. And give the guy a dollar. You give the other one a person a dollar.
I did.
You gave him a dollar. What did he say? You told him you're renting. You're renting space. You should be a shutuf in his property so you can carry. So very good. You're all set.
Yeah, three quarters of it.
And
two different places. You can't get.
The wood. Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't have the beams that we needed.
Yeah.
Duties on wire.
Yeah.
The nylon threads we wanted.
Yeah.
Because he sold the wire.
those plastic
cable
to hold it in place.
Yeah, the cable thing. So is that what people have?
Yeah. You got to go back and forth. All right. You got everything. There's a good lumber yard in Borough Park. I once bought it in New Utrecht. They cut for you everything on the spot there. They you know, you want whatever you want, and they'll cut it. They charge you whatever, but they're efficient in giving you exactly what you want. Or you have to have your own tools. You know, you got to have your own patchka around. Or you got a patchka with your own, you know, you have a jigsaw and you have a this and you have a that and you get to wood. I think if this guy switched afterwards, we'll switch tables. Yeah.
Chicken on Shabbos, you know, hot and salt, put some salt in the chicken to be used.
You already have salt in the chicken, so it and that's enough.
I don't mind. You'll take it.